Welcome to a special edition of the Texas Hour with Pratt on Texas, featuring an interview with a thinker, writer, doer, or someone with an interesting story to tell.
From the True Texan Studio, I'm Robert Pratt, and this is the Texas Hour from Pratt on Texas. Our Lone Star story of the day, well, it's a special edition of Pratt on Texas. More interview with my great friend, Matt Crow, and Matt, of course, has been a guest host on the program. Matt served as a communications advanced person in the Reagan White House, worked in the 84 reelect bid on the campaign. And if you haven't heard the other interview about that, well, go look through the podcast. You'll find it. It's really good. We're going to talk a little bit more. Matt ended up working on Capitol Hill for a long time, and we're going to do some shows on that because you're going to want to hear it. And you're going to want to hear it because you're going to hear it echo a lot of what I've told you about Austin and Capitol Hill, that, folks, it's not a pretty place, and it's not run by a lot of nice people. And we're talking the staffers and everybody. There's a reason our country's in the problem that it has in our culture, in this Washington-centric culture. It's dangerous. But I want to go back and talk more about the Reagan White House and the experience there. Matt, I want to ask you a question about Ronald Reagan, because in the other interview we did on your experience in the Reagan White House, I mean, I just keep tearing up when you're talking about Reagan. And some people don't understand. It's not personality worship. It's what he stood for and his consistency and his faith to his God and his country. It's something like when you read about King David or Solomon, you realize Ronald Reagan was not, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, and I don't know if this is a good way to put it, Ronald Reagan wasn't in love with being president. Ronald Reagan didn't run to be president so he could be president and top out a resume. Ronald Reagan was there for the same reason I'm here doing what I do every day, because he truly, deeply believed it. It was a very different environment than, well, you know, the family needs another big star, or the ambitious Clinton, I've got to be there. Almost everyone who runs for president, almost all of them, are there basically to fill some personal need of their own ego. Ronald Reagan seems to me to be extraordinarily different from that. Talk about
it. It was a core belief in his gut. Growing up in Dixon, Illinois, his dad was a shoe salesman. His mom was a seamstress. Came from nothing, really. I mean, he worked very hard to make it in the radio business and then later on in Hollywood. But he had a core belief that the United States was a force for good in the world. And I can't be any more specific about it, but he just had a feeling that the country, the theory of the United States was worth preserving and worth promoting. And I think the confluence of the Cold War and Ronald Reagan getting to the White House was I think preordained. If I don't want to sound, you know, too out there, but I think he came along at the right time. John Paul came along at the right time.
God Margaret works Thatcher in our lives.
Yeah, exactly. And when he got to Hollywood, was much different back then, of course, than it is now. But he became president of the Screen Actors Guild because he thought that he could really do some good in terms of, number one, people's careers. Number two, the union was a force for good at that point. They were allowing actors and actresses to branch away from the studios to develop their own companies and, you know, small business and make their own decisions, and they weren't under the control of the studios anymore. Secondly, the communist influence in Hollywood was huge. Back in the late 40s and early 50s, you had people sympathetic to the communist and the socialist Marxism, and they wanted to influence the motion picture industry. And Reagan, not so much because he understood that there was going to be influences in Hollywood, but this was a huge threat to the United States. If you have children going to films and portraying an ideology of the communists as a force for good, that's a problem. And the communists in Hollywood were very crafty about that. They would certain plot lines, certain references, certain language.
Oh, they do it today.
Well, they do
all the immoral stuff.
Reagan saw it, and he wasn't alone, of course. There were dozens and dozens of other actors. But again, Reagan was not a knee-jerk reaction to the communist influence. It was something that they were all aware of, and he put his foot down and said, this is not going to happen. And one of the ways that he did that was to make sure that the actors knew what they were getting themselves into. And he was threatened. He was threatened to be killed by people in Hollywood, and he always carried a gun. Probably the first, you know, president that carried all the time when he was the director of the Screen Actors Guild.
Well, because, no wonder he was so friendly to the Second Amendment, yeah, because, you know, the rebirth of the National Rifle Association, it's the oldest civil rights organization, but its political effective rebirth coincided with Reagan's rise to power. You know, the left had done what they're doing now in the 60s and 70s, is the bail reform, the let criminals go free, don't police, let them riot in the streets. In America's crime rate, I know people now think it's bad. The violent crime rate in this country was massively greater by the time Ronald Reagan became president than it is now. I mean, massively greater. And we began to fight for Second Amendment rights again, for self-protection. And Reagan was with us. And incrementally, little by little, and it worked. I mean, the crime rate has fallen. You know, there have been a few little upticks in that, but the whole graph is a slant downward.
And as we've seen lately, too, back when Reagan, you know, was making his way through the Screen Actors Guild and then worked for General Electric as a spokesperson and became governor of California. At that point in time, too, the powers that be in the California school system were trying to push God out of the classroom. Yeah. And got out of textbooks. And
it's the big national thing. No prayer in schools, no God in class, no God anywhere. And, you know, but those same leftists still control our schools from the universities down to the pre-Ks. And, you know, that's an area where I think Mr. Reagan would be very sad that we didn't make gains in, because we've let them keep their control. How did y'all talk about these things? I mean, you were staff people. You're busy every day doing functional things in the White House. But was there a golden thread of Americanism, or a golden thread of Reagan's philosophy that went through everything you did?
Everything in the White House ascribed to the notion that the president was on, you know, the right track with the country economically and so forth. And from a national policy or an international policy perspective, everybody who worked there were pretty much one mind. There weren't too many outliers. They perceived the threat of communism in Central America. They perceived the threat of communism in Western Europe. They perceived the threat of the Chinese influence in Southeast Asia. There wasn't a lot of differences. I can't remember. And when we did these trips, either around the world with other foreign leaders or domestically with mayors and governors, they were designed to project that theory that America's best days are ahead of us. We need less government. We need less taxes. Law and order. And I got to tell you, some of the guys I worked with in the advance office had worked for Nixon. And it was a very interesting difference of the way they saw things with Nixon and the way we saw things with Reagan. They were mostly, there were a few of them, but it was an interesting difference.
Let me ask you a question. Were they of the, just guessing here, were they of the mindset or the habit of, we're always in crisis and we're managing crisis, whereas Reagan was about rebuilding America and just moving forward? Is that a way to say, because my reading would make me guess that was part of
you hit it pretty straight on. It was an us against them kind of theory, right, with the Nixon guys. And no quarter given. We're going to butt heads, and, you know, if they act up, they're off the press plane, and we're not going to that town because they screwed us, you know, in an election years ago where they treated Nixon badly or something.
In other words, in the middle of an ongoing fight, whereas Reagan's kind of out like a leader way ahead of everybody, bringing the nation with him, where you're not circled in the wagons going at each other.
The Nixon guys were effective, but they were a little bit more hand-to-hand combat, whereas we were more a little strategic, you know, campaign.
Lenny's autobiography, and you'll figure out there was attitude.
They were very hands-on, and I mean,
Let's talk Nancy Reagan in a moment. Back in a moment.
Pratt's interview continues after the break.
It's hard to explain why my greatest customer service experience wasn't at a luxury resort or private club, but was going to the dentist in Costa Rica, Dr. Silvia Zuniga of Dental Care. There are big Costa Rica practices which, while saving you big money, work just like they do here, herding patients through as fast as possible to increase billings. That's not how Dr. Sylvia Zuniga works. Sylvia's practice is purposely small and personal with the highest level of service and quality I've experienced for anything. My entire trip cost us less than half my lowest quote at home, including hotel for a week, restaurants, airfare for both of us, and local transport, and much more dental work than those local quotes covered. I had it all done. No wonder my Lubbock neighbor had been using her for his dental work for years, and now you can visit Texas Tech's new Costa Rica campus nearby. If you want top dental work at affordable prices, learn more about Dr. Sylvia Zuniga and dental care by clicking the banner at prattontexas.com. Finally, having your teeth fixed and beautiful can be affordable and even fun.
Michael Hurley of Hurley Benefit Services.
I think one of the challenges that all small business owners are facing today is while they may be less than 50 employees, they're still competing with the big box companies that have full-blown benefit plans. Employers are looking for solutions, and my out-of-the-box thinking is providing a solution.
With the innovative coverage offered by Hurley Benefit Services, you can have individual or group coverage that is a lot better, that costs a lot less. HurleyBenefits.com.
Specialty Trucks of Lubbock. It's in the name, Specialty Trucks. Specialty Trucks of Lubbock finds good trucks and reconditions them to be ready to work for you and your business. Mike and Jason have repeat customers from all over the country, even Alaska. Call 806-687-1115 to get Mike and Jason working for you. Visit SpecialtyTrucksOfLubbock.com and see their inventory. Solve problems and save money with Specialty Trucks of Lubbock. It's in the name, Specialty Trucks. SpecialtyTrucksOfLubbock.com.
Standing in spirit with those who won Texas liberty and working to stop the hordes on the left. It's Robert Pratt with Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back to Pratt on Texas. Visiting with Matt Crow, who will do more interviews because he's got a lot of time on Capitol Hill and other administrations. But we're talking about the Ronald Reagan administration, the most important administration, the administration that rebuilt America and took us out of this constant economic crisis and moved us into a growing economy that lasted 30-something years and conquered the world, really. I mean, it shut down the Soviet bloc. Even China turned openness and turned to some form of capitalism. Ronald Reagan's one of the seminal figures in history, period. Not American history, but world history. And Matt was there in the White House. Matt, Ronald Reagan was, like I said, he didn't want to be president to be president. He was there to do something. He was a true believer in what he believed. His wife, Nancy, got terrible press, but Nancy Reagan was the epitome of the loyal wife. She was there to help Ronnie, to help her Ronnie, and defend him at all. I mean, she was smart and sharp. And talk about that, because a lot of the internal battles between the big egos in the White House always tried to run their way either through Nancy Reagan, or she seemed to have to be the one to come in some cases and tell Ronnie, look, you got to get rid of that guy or something. I mean, talk about your perceptions of that, because I know it got very nasty, as it does when you have that many giant egos and accomplished people all, you know, begging for attention and wanting more seat time with the president.
Mrs. Reagan really did work together with the president. I mean, she reviewed the schedules from the advance office. She'd make it very clear through her chief of staff, Elaine Crispin, if she didn't like something or not, that she thought for the president wasn't appropriate or something could be done better. And generally, she was always right because she just had been doing it so long with the president as the first term and then, of course, as governor. But the left couldn't stand her because she took pride in her appearance. She'd never left the White House in anything but a dress with her hair done, and she had been a housewife to the president while he was the governor and first lady of California and first lady of the United States.
Now, she had been an accomplished. She had her own career when they married, but this is the age of the feminist movement that now is oddly doesn't even look like itself, but you know, the idea was that she's a loyal wife and works as a team with the husband. You know, they frame this false idea that means you're a step below the husband and not an actual partnership. Of course, that just shows how stupid they are, because if you knew Nancy Reagan's personality, and I only know it from reading, and especially Bill Buckley's last book that was ever published after he died was The Letters between he and Nancy Reagan over a generation. And Nancy Reagan was not somebody sitting there saying, what do I do now? Do you want coffee? Yeah. Nancy Reagan was as much a part of this as Ronald Reagan.
She also had a very acute radar that could sense danger approaching and could sense somebody trying to use the president or do something that the president necessarily didn't want to do. And the president, like all of us, like most of us rather, we hate saying no to people. I don't like saying no to people, but once in a while you do. And she was very good at sensing people trying to take advantage of the president.
Well, let's talk about that. You had these characters who in and of themselves may not have been bad. There were a few people that ended up sort of being sellouts and doing damage to Ronald Reagan that were senior White House people. But for the most part, these are people who all just, well, let's even set aside the ego and just say they all felt what they believed was best. And of course, you've got a lot of them. You know, you're talking about giants, Ed Meese, all these other people, yeah. Deaver, Stockman, yeah. All these people. There were a lot of, in the sort, especially when you got there the second term, a lot of, I don't know. It's common for people to move on. Some people move on after one term. It's a workload the public can't understand. Talk about Nancy Reagan's role in the middle of these big controversies. And of course, you had the Iran-Contra ridiculous stuff and all of that that brought a really a pall over the White House.
I think, you know, one of the things you have to remember, too, when they had the summit at Reykjavik and then later on when the president went back to Moscow for that summit, and then when Gorbachev came to D.C. for that summit, you know, Mrs. Reagan, she had this weird skill that she knew that things were heading in the right direction and they weren't going to deviate from that direction. They were going to accomplish what they wanted to do when they went to Washington. And she wasn't going to have anybody distract the president from that. That's why she was.
So when they got into these, I don't want to use the term, but these back and forths in the White House that were distracting and giving press and taking us away from the agenda, Was she sort of the knight in armor who was the quick to understand how bad this was and why it's wrong and it's a disservice to everybody, especially the president?
Yeah, and to cut your losses and to cut staff if you had to and people needed to leave and go, you know, find to do something else. And a classic example of that is Don Regan. And Don was, you know, a heavyweight at Merrill Lynch and on Wall Street and so forth. And, you know, big business tycoon, came in as chief of staff. He and Mrs. Reagan had differences of opinion. And I got to tell you that, like in any marriage, who are you going to cut, your wife or your advisor? And, you know, Don didn't like that. He didn't like being told what to do. And it really wasn't being told he couldn't do this or couldn't do that, but he had ideas of his own that where the president should go in his, you know, historic trajectory. And Mrs. Reagan just thought that was not the right way to go. And neither did the president, but she had to help him along to that a little bit.
I don't quite understand why the outsider thinks that unless they had a view of the spouse as being something other than an equal partner, why they have the idea that they somehow are smarter or better. But I see this all the time in politics where staff members and advisors or whomever forget they're not the office holder. Was that a problem in the White House?
Not particularly. I mean, everybody, as far as I could tell, didn't want to run, you know, against the current. But there, people had, you know, differences of opinion, and that manifested itself in the Iran-Contra scandal, where John Poindexter and Ollie North and Bob McFarlane figured out that they could run this underground operation of, you know, selling guns and or selling things to the Iranians and then using that money to buy weapons for the Contras. You know, I guess
it's very easy to see the justification arc on that.
Well, I was going to say, I think the right idea, but they did it wrong. I mean, I know why they did it, and I'm in full agreement with them. We needed to arm the Contras, but the Congress wouldn't let us arm the Contras, though. See,
right.
And these guys knew it, and they went around the Congress. And you know, listen, I'm not for breaking the law and going against, you know, the edicts and the laws of Congress, but at the same time, as you said earlier, we're in a life and death struggle down there. And I mean, the Sandinistas, what was going on in El Salvador and in Colombia. It was bad. It was bad news. And so when Mrs. Reagan found out about this, you know, heads rolled and she was very, very upset, as
was
the president.
You know, the press likes to talk about themselves being the big, ever since Woodward and Bernstein, they all think they're the ones that run America. you just hinted at something. Yeah, the press broke some of this stuff, but wasn't it really Mrs. Reagan who took action about this to stop this damage to her husband and to the country?
Yeah, because that's exactly what it was. She saw it damaging Ronald Reagan. She saw it damaging the United States. She told the president, we've got to make a clean break of all this. You've got to go out. And the president knew this. But, you know, she said instead of circling the wagons like they would have in the Nixon White House, they just went full out and said, look, we're aware of what happened. This was wrong. It shouldn't have happened. And we're not going to do it again. And fortunately, at that point in Reagan's administration, he had reached such a peak of popularity that the next year and a half, 2 years, it really didn't put a dent in his reputation, I don't think.
Was it? Well, all right, we're out of time in this segment. Visiting with Matt Crowe in this special edition of Pratt on Texas. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Pratt's interview continues after you hear from our generous sponsors.
Communication's a top priority with commercial builder Tommy Klein Construction. A 20-year-plus Tommy Klein Construction customer said, when we call, text, or email, the majority of the time we get a response back within the hour. Many times they call us before we have a question with updates on our projects. And with Tommy Klein Construction, if there's a need for an adjustment or warranty, they give it top priority as if it were their own building. Tommy Klein Construction, general commercial building contractors. Reach them 806-438-3384. 806-438-3384.
If you're sick to death of the mainstream news, we invite you to check out 21st Century Watch magazine. We cover developments we have no choice but to watch from a biblical perspective. Not only is it priceless, it's free. Call 903-561-7070 and 21stcenturywatch.com. That's 903-561-7070 and 21stcenturywatch.com. A little hope would be nice.
What happens if another party responsible for your injury doesn't step up to make your loss whole? How do you go about getting what you're owed for your loss? Ted Liggett and the Liggett Law Group can help get those responsible to actually accept and act on that responsibility. Ted Liggett does it every day with integrity, advocacy, and results. Call Ted Liggett, the heavy hitter, at 806-744-HURT or visit LiggettLawGroup.com. Don't be cheated. Call Ted Liggett and the Liggett Law Group.
From Reagan to Biden, Bill Clements to Greg Abbott, here's a host who has been involved in it all while being self-employed and fighting government overreach too. It's Robert Pratt with Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back to Pratt on Texas, a special edition visiting with Matt Crowe, specifically about his years in the Reagan White House. And Matt and I play golf once in a while. He's I beat him, but I'm a terrible golfer. He's just terrible. Like
I'm worse than you are.
We're working our way to the bottom, let me tell you, or the top in golf, the high score. We're centenarians there. Matt's told me he has a lot of stories, though, on Nancy Reagan. So I want to give you more time just to talk about the First Lady, because she as well is a seminal figure in American politics.
Well, and here's
they were such a team. People tried to misportray them, but they were a team. They were a godly, biblical style marriage from as we understand it in the modern age.
And with all the foibles of a married couple and all the ups and downs of a married couple. But I'll tell you a quick story here about the Reagans. I did an advance once to Walter Reed. The president was going up to have his hand operated on. I'm not sure what you call it, but as you get a little older, sometimes your fingers start to curl in, and I think it was his thumb and his left trigger finger, and he had to have it operated on. Simple operation, but the doctors wanted him up at Walter Reed the night before because they were going to operate on his hand the next morning. So we went up to the...
And by the way, people forget, anytime the president's getting medical stuff, it's a big deal. But when it was the Cold War, where everybody in the world is thinking about that nuclear button for nuclear... It was so much more amplified than it is today.
It was.
I mean, anything. You go in for a checkup. I mean, it was that big of a deal. It's all because of the nuclear threat.
And I'm not sure if they had to put the president under, in which case they would have had President Bush or Vice President Bush, you know, on duty. But we got up to the hospital. President landed by helicopter there, and we went into they had like a VIP suite at the where Eisenhower had been and so on and so forth. And it didn't look like a hospital. It looked like a hotel in that wing of the hospital. But long story short, Mrs. Reagan was going to come up from the White House to have dinner with the president that night before his operation. And about 6 o'clock, I'm in the one of the side rooms with one of the agents, and we're just sitting there watching television, and the president appears in the doorway because he's right down the hall. And he said, "Do you think you can find me some matches?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure. I'll look for some matches." Well, nobody smokes in a hospital for the most part. So I'm running around downstairs at Walter Reed trying to find a book of matches. And I finally found some in the kitchen of the hospital, the cafeteria. So I run them back upstairs to the suite where the president is. I handed him the matches. I said, "Is there anything I can do?" He said, "No, I've got it all. I've got it all handled." Well, he'd brought candles with him and candelabras, and he had put them on the table where he and Nancy were going to have their dinner. And he was lighting the candles on the tabletop. And she came in. She's like, "Oh, this is so wonderful," you know. And
he's the one in the hospital, but he's making it special for her.
That's great.
That summarizes Ronald Reagan's personality very well. Always concerned for others and his country. And just, it wasn't about him, whereas what we've seen since then has been about him, about the person.
He loved her very much, and she loved him very much. Another one of my favorite stories about Mrs. Reagan was we were in the Century Plaza Hotel in Los Angeles. I'm sure you stayed there a number of times, Robert, and that's where the president, Mrs. Reagan, would stay.
I have not, it's the one that was famous on all the TV shows. They would show on the TV shows where there were some waitresses. I remember that. Isn't it the one with the round towers?
That's it.
There was a big TV show back that always used that as the setup.
And if they weren't at the ranch,
I tried to avoid California my whole life. So sorry, I know you're a native Californian. But well, remember, it was in my life. I'm a little younger than you by a year or two or three. And California was not Reagan's California by the time I came around. It was Jerry Moonbeam and all the other ones.
Well, don't get me started on Jerry Brown. But anyway, they stayed at the top in the presidential suite up there at the Century Plaza. And if Mrs. Reagan was by herself, she would stay at the Beverly Hills Hotel because Merv Griffin owned that hotel at the time, and she loved Merv Griffin.
Yeah,
and
they big got friend of the way. Family, Merv, a great friend. Yeah. And this was back when a bunch of these folks, by the way, a lot of the great movie stars were Republicans and stuff.
Oh,
go back and look at this. This is, the world is very different than what it was then. Yeah. And Reagan was beloved by all these people because they didn't have this super wealth from one or two movies. People worked in Hollywood, and they owned businesses.
We had done an event at one of the hospitals, and for one reason or another, I got peeled off to advance Mrs. Reagan that day. And we got back to the hotel in the motorcade, which was a lot less hassle than the president's motorcade. But we got back to the hotel. We were walking through the lobby, and the agents were with us and a couple of police officers. And we got into the elevator to go up to the penthouse, and it was a long ride. I think they're like on the 26th floor or something. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Reagan kind of starts looking at us in the elevator, probably like four of us at that point, and she starts asking us what our birth dates were. And she says, "When were you born?" And I think I've told you this, Robert.
Yeah.
But she asked one agent, she goes, "Not the year, I just want the day."
Right.
And she gets to me and I said, "Well, it's March 4th. She goes, "Oh." She goes, "That's very significant." And just then the doors open to the suite, and I never was able to ask her what that meant. And
she leaves that hanging there. Yeah, we know she was into the astrology.
Years
stuff.
Later, and you'd heard whispers about it, but years later I figured it out. That was the day that her astrologer, back when she was a young lady, told her to get married. It was March 4th. And she married Ronald Reagan on March 4th. I can't tell you the year, but William Holden and his wife were their best man and maid of honor.
Right.
I'm like, well, you know, there was something to that. So
it was a good date.
Yeah.
So no wonder you ended up, she would say, "Well, that's why you ended up in the White House."
She liked me. Yeah, she liked me. She liked my hair.
You have hair. I've made fun of your hair. It's still beautiful. In fact, that picture we've had of you with Ronald Reagan, you were very young, but you still had the hair, kind of like Reagan did.
She was very sweet, but like the president, you weren't going to make a lot of small talk with her. She wouldn't like that. But she was, she had kids and Patty and Ron.
And they had a lot of trouble with their
they
kids.
They did,
but they weren't people. They weren't unique problems. They're the problems families all around us have.
Sure.
Those letters that Buckley published, his correspondence with them, going back to well before he ran for governor in California, a lot of those are with Ron, but most of them are with Nancy. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because they used Buckley and his kids as kind of a surrogate to help with their kids. And you're just listening to parents. You're not listening. It's just the circumstances in which they are, you know, on the world stage are very, very important. But the problems they deal with are the same problems everybody else deals with.
Yeah.
But they gave Nancy Reagan a tremendously, you know, that we all know that, well, Ronald Reagan, he's just an actor. He's old and
warmonger.
He doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
It was like everybody else. It was contradictory. On one hand, he's this aggressive general warmonger. And on the other hand, he's a daft old man puttering around the White House.
Doesn't know what's
nothing,
going on.
Which is everybody I've ever talked to who was in that White House said, my gosh, he did hire the best people like a good executive and let them do their job. He wasn't a micromanager, but he darn sure knew what was going on when he was in charge. Just like the speech in Berlin where they said, don't say it about tear this wall down. Don't do it. And he got up there and did it because he was in charge. He knew what he was about. They pilloried Nancy Reagan. In you could tell it was catty envy, but there was more to it. You know, the White House was in bad shape. America had been through the 60s and the 70s with the awful economy. It was in terrible condition. It was not a good showplace. She started fixing things. Of course, now nobody gets criticized after her for buying new china or fixing anything.
Yeah.
Nancy Reagan wasn't doing that stuff to benefit Nancy Reagan. She was doing that so that the country wasn't embarrassed when dignitaries came and things. She had that same sense that Ronald Reagan had, didn't she?
Well, exactly. And why put down somebody who wants to have a party at the White House for a visiting head of state and have a white tie? Well, what's wrong with that? I mean, the White House isn't a barn. I mean,
Jimmy Carter was this big fake, you know, where he carried his own suitcase off Air Force One. It was empty. He didn't carry, you know, that's fakery. That's lying to the people. And they had all that stuff about the White House just being old, plain old country folk. And what a change it was.
I got a kick out of the fact the press always made a big deal about how many days the president's been in California at his ranch, or how many days has he been at Camp David. Well, I got news for you. He couldn't stand living in the White House. He wanted to be out of Washington every chance he had.
President. That's why he was a good president. He wasn't part of that Washington culture. It's something I sort of like about Trump, too. He sort of has the same attitude. Back in a moment with more on Pratt on Texas with our great friend Matt Crowe. Stay with us.
Pratt's interview continues in a moment. Stand by.
A Texas Aggie from the big country said he visited Dr. Sylvia Zuniga at Dental Care in Costa Rica, spent about $7,000 on the entire trip with his wife, and yet saved over $5,000. He asked, how could it be any better? Our Aggie friend and listener wrote, thank you for recommending Sylvia. Her work and service was what you said it would be. Very good. It took me several months of listening to you and researching on the internet to finally decide to do it. So glad I did. Learn more about Dr. Sylvia Zuniga and Dental Care by clicking the banner at PrattOnTexas.com. Using a firearm when under threat is as serious an action as you can take in life, and it might be critical to keeping your life. Know the law. Know you can hit the target, not an innocent bystander. And know you are legal to be armed when crossing into most states. Get Texas License to Carry training for only $65 from West Texas Justice. Beginners are welcome. Be wise, be trained, be legal. Inquire today at WestTexasJustice.com. That's WestTexasJustice.com. WestTexasJustice.com.
No 30-06 or 30-07 signs here. Nope. Pratt on Texas welcomes true Texans with the tools that won and keep our liberty.
Visiting with Matt Crowe on Pratt on Texas in this special edition. Matt, you spent a good bit of time. You spent time on the Reagan reelect campaign. You got to fly on Air Force One. You were in campaign events. You did a lot of official events. You've alluded to doing advance work for the First Lady as well, Nancy Reagan. Those last years, that second term was a little bit tumultuous inside the White House. It was less tumultuous in the country. I mean, in the beginning, we had this inflation, and I mean, it was awful. It was awful. It took terrible medicine to cure this country of the left's ills, which, by the way, they're openly pushing us back into with Janet Yellen saying inflation would be a good thing for people. It's very frightening. But the second term was more tumultuous in the White House and less tumultuous in the country. Reagan was popular with everybody. And tell us about just what went on during that term. I mean, as far as the focus a lot was in the Soviet Union. We really got them where we wanted. They finally had somebody it looked like we could do business with in Gorbachev. You did the trip to Moscow Just talk about that term overall and your memories.
Things seem to be settling out the last couple of years. Just from my perspective, the advance work was a lot more relaxed. The pace was a little slower. The trips were fewer and farther in between.
Reagan slowing down himself a little bit?
No, not
age as presidents. I mean, you look at all of them, even if they're young, like, you know, Clinton, they come out looking 20 years younger. Reagan didn't age that much.
No, he didn't. One of the things we would do, though, is if we were going to go to Asia, we would take our time getting there. So the president would fly to Los Angeles and spend a few days.
That's how I like to travel. Yeah. I think it works better.
And then we get on to Honolulu and spend a few days there. Claudette Colbert had a house there that she let the Reagans go to and swim at and
Claudette
have a lot of fun
Colbert.
At.
Just great, they're friends, all the great screen stars.
And, well, that's a whole other story, the advance in Hawaii. But anyway, he'd spend a few days in Hawaii, and then he'd go to wherever he was going, whether it was, you know, Shanghai or Seoul, Korea, or what have you. But by the time he got there, he was rested and acclimated. It wasn't one of these, boom, you're there. 18 hours
later.
He
didn't have the 747 either, and it wasn't quite as spacious. I mean, they had a nice bed and everything, but it's just, that's hard because, you know, you alluded in our last segment to the press griping about how many days he spent here or there. President's not off.
No.
President's not off. He's working all the time.
And on 26,000, which was the serial number of Air Force One at that time, 26,000 had it had teletypes. It had, you know, fairly instantaneous communications. But they also had something called the auto pen, which I always found fascinating. And now
they're all for signing.
Yeah,
those
and so
are great.
The president would, you know, he would be doing business in there, and he'd say yes to this, no to that, yes to this, and. I forget her last name. Her first name was Betty. But she'd take the document and she'd go down into the airplane and then they put in the auto pen. You hear this thing going back and forth with these documents and it would be signing the president's name to him and dedications and so on and so forth. But yeah, the president took a little bit more time, I think, travel wise. It wasn't all these, one day you're in D.C., the next minute you're in Shanghai and we're going to do business. He took his time getting there.
What was the atmosphere in the White House?
Because a lot more relaxed.
The Bushes were on the ascendancy.
Yeah.
They thought they're gonna inherit.
Yeah.
But they came into this thing hating Ronald Reagan and doing nothing but undermining him most of the time.
Well, and the smart White House staff people would make friends with the vice president's staff because you figured that George H.W. Bush was going to be the nominee. And if you had, crossed them or stepped on them, and a lot of the Reagan staff did, they disliked them.
Well, for good reason.
And it was
were being undermined.
Well, it's just completely different people. But, I mean, if you wanted to stick around in an administration, you were nice to the Bushes. And, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, kissing their behinds, but you were nice to their staffs. You made friends with their chief of staff and so forth. But, yeah, it was a slow coast down to the runway. In the last year of the Reagan White House, he spent more time in California. Then, of course, we had the convention in Houston where President Bush was nominated. And I remember being out at the airport with the president because he was leaving at the same time. Actually, the Bush was coming in. The president was leaving. So they met at the Houston airport. And Bush whispered in the president's ear who his vice presidential nominee was going to be because he waited until the convention to announce that. Nobody knew who it was.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of cool. And I remember leaving Houston saying to myself, man, I never want to go back there. It's too hot and humid in August. It was brutal.
It is terrible. I literally don't want to go to Austin or Dallas or Houston or anywhere during the hot of the summer.
And
that shows you how tough the Texans were because when they settled this state, that's where they settled it. You know, and Houston was a swamp. I mean, it's a malaria swamp. And they stayed there for a lot. Sam Houston wanted the capital there. And they were tough people. They didn't have air conditioning or anything. You know, they weren't like these Northern Californians that were just used to temperate weather. But, you know, that had to be an interesting transition. Different from the typical one party to another party swing.
Yeah.
Because the Bushes owed everything to Ronald Reagan and his popularity. Most of the staff surely knew that and had come to love Ronald Reagan. Even if they didn't really share his policy prescriptives, what was that mood between people? What were they generally Reagan backers? Because you know what we get today? We have a ton of these people who worked in the Reagan White House who were brought in by Bush, who use that as they're conservatives, but they're not conservatives on hardly anything. There's some that former Speaker of the House in Texas was one of them. You know, my memory was they weren't particularly.
I didn't
backers
see,
of Reagan, yeah. But I'm sure working there, Ronald Reagan was such a magnetic personality. Surely they were actually liked Ronald Reagan.
I think most of them did. You know, the vice president's staff is over in the old executive office building, the OEOB. It's called the Eisenhower building. But I didn't see a lot of interaction between the two. I mean, we'd run into them. We'd see the staff and so on and so forth. But much smaller footprint. It's just not something you even
thought about. Were they planning for their future when they were in there and not really bothering with you guys?
Yeah, pretty much. And there was one comment that Barbara Bush made, unfortunately, during the campaign when Bush was running, and she said that the Bush White House would be a kinder, gentler government kind of White House. And Mrs. Reagan heard that and said, kinder and gentler than what?
Than what?
And like inferring that the President Reagan was too hard on people or too was mean to people or cruel to people. That Mrs. Reagan really took that sideways, and I'm sure Mrs. Bush didn't mean it like that. But
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but
you know, later on after they were out of office, she showed her streak. She had a streak of a meanness of her own that was sort of a protecting her children and her flock.
Yeah,
that you get from people that sometimes people, you know, said about Nancy Reagan when she was protecting her Ronnie.
This is off the point, but it's kind of my fault. But I never could figure, and I worked for George H.W. Bush at the Department of Health and Human Services, where I had been in the early Reagan years, but in the second term. But I went back to HHS and worked there for 4 years. And I never really understood Bush, because here's a guy who was from Midland, but he spent his summers in Kennebunkport. And I never could get that dichotomy of a East Coast preppy guy and a World War II hero, but being from Midland. And I never really could get a handle on where his balance was. Nice enough guy, but I mean, I loved working for him, but I just never really got a sense of who he was really personally.
And Reagan, they tended to get along, and I think Bush, it was because Bush had that previous generation ideal and that blue blood ideal of loyalty to the commander-in-chief and to his partner in this, and won Reagan's respect tremendously. Yeah. Was that pretty well how it worked out?
I think so. They got along real well, and Reagan listened to Bush, and Bush listened to Reagan. And, you know, Bush had quite a pedigree. He'd been ambassador
CIA
to China, he'd been CIA director, he'd been chairman of the Republican National Committee, among just a few. And Reagan, you know, he needed that experience. He needed that. But, you know, like I said, Reagan's one thing. The rest of the staff, They kind of look down on the Bush people, unfortunately. So
Well, okay.
I guess.
Who knows? Matt Crowe. Now, folks, it's been a great special edition. We're going to do more. He spent a lot of time on Capitol Hill. So, you know, some point we'll have some more for you. I'm sure you're as fascinated by it as am I. Long live liberty. Long live Texas. And may God bless us all. Adios, mis amigos.
Hear all the great Texas music Pratt on Texas is famous for by listening to the show on the air or by stream. 5 to 6 p.m. Central in Lubbock. Tune to 98.7 FM or 1420 AM on KWBF. In Abilene and the Big Country, tune to 96.1 FM Q Country.